Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, brought to you by the Desai Group. The Desai Group, getting the real work of innovation done. Visit them on the web at desai.com, D-E-S-A-I.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from the Radio X studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here's your host, Stone Payton.
Welcome to the show, everyone. This is your host, Stone Payton, although I'm actually your co-host now. I'm pleased to introduce our new co-host, Todd Schnick. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Hey, Stone. It's great to be part of this team.
Yeah. Hey, we got to get that voiceover guy back in here and do something different on that, huh?
Is he on parole?
Yeah. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, we need to do that right away, I think.
So how you been, Lee? I've been away for like 3 weeks.
I didn't even notice. There was always someone there.
So oh, I know.
Much better looking than you.
Yeah, Stephanie was here, and like viewership and listenership is like skyrocketing.
Yeah, I noticed that, and I said very quickly, this lady needs her own show before I lose my job. So are things going pretty well for you since I've been gone, though?
Yeah, A-okay. Everything's great.
All right. Well, things are great in my life. We went on monthly vacation, stayed 3 weeks this time. My tomatoes are coming in. I'm on top of
that's
the world.
It. That's the new currency in this economy is tomatoes.
Yeah,
that's
homegrown tomatoes. Well, we have a marvelous show for you this morning. I am delighted to introduce to you a gentleman by the name of Ron Davis. He's a business automation consultant with Image One. Please join me in welcoming him to the show. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here this morning.
Well, we are delighted to have you in the studio. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about Image One and the kind of work that you're out there doing for folks?
Sure. We are a technology solutions company who is dedicated to helping organizations automate the business processes and the processes that are broken, helps them to create more efficiencies. And basically, we are problem solvers. We go into an organization, we sit down with them, we look throughout the whole, basically just about any process that you see. I mean, you can look at sales processes, you can look at financial processes, just plain out operating processes. And, typically we find that some of those are broken. Some they want to be able to do them quicker. They find that they're inefficient. And so we come in there and we help them. We consult with them and we sit down and we say, here's the technology we believe that will help you.
This idea of business process automation, help me with a definition of it. And does it always involve technology or is it sometimes just about improving processes in another way?
Yeah, no, it doesn't always include technology, though there is so much technology out there now that's affordable that it really does, enhance what they're doing. But the reality of things is you've got a company that might start out small and grow over time, but they still use a lot of the same processes that they've used when they were smaller. What happens, though, they grow, they become inefficient. You have so many people who are touching the different pieces of a document or whatever part of that process it is, and it costs them money. It costs them customer service. They don't get paid in time. So there's a number of different things. And what we want to do is we don't necessarily always want to change the processes. What we're looking to do is help them automate those. So most times it does involve technology. Sometimes it doesn't, but it requires them to sit down and actually look at their processes, which is not always easy.
Can you kind of take us through an example where maybe a client of yours had a cumbersome process and you were able to streamline it a bit and save them time or money?
Sure. I've got lots of examples, but we deal, just to kind of take a step back here, our customer base is extremely broad. If you look at anybody, just about any type of organization uses processes. So we deal with Fortune 500 companies, we deal with small business, we deal with county government and education, education being one of the big areas. And just to give you an idea, you look at a college where somebody comes in and wants to get financial aid to help them, be able to enroll in that college. Well, they have to fill out paperwork. They have to give that paperwork to somebody. That paperwork then bounces 4 or 5 different places and hopefully it gets processed correctly. But what happens is that that student starts on their first day and they find out that nothing was processed correctly. And then nobody can find the actual paperwork. So what we do is we come in and we say, okay, let's get rid of the paper, let's make it more electronic. Let's flow it through what we call a workflow, which is basically it routes it based on their internal business processes, and we make things more efficient because now anybody who needs to have access to that information has it at their fingertips.
I've been cringing the whole time he's been talking because as he's talking about, hey, you touch a piece of paper, it costs you money, I get this vision of my desk in my home office.
Now, so it sounds like there's sometimes some inefficiencies when you deal with bureaucracies.
Yes, there is.
Is it? I've read that somewhere, Lee. Yes.
You think it's the paper is a big cause of it?
Well, yeah. If I can just give you a kind of a few stats here. These are just, you know, general stats here as far as across organizations. But, you know, corporate data is doubling every 6 to 8 months. And typically that's all documents. You know, companies are spending somewhere between 5 and 15% of their total revenue managing the data and documents, and 90% of all corporate memory is on paper. So if we break those down and we take a look at those, okay, we know that the problem's not going away. It's only getting bigger. We know it's expensive, and we know that that knowledge for a particular company all rests in file cabinets that could be on-site or off-site. So, you know, it's easy for companies and for the people who run them to kind of push that out, you know, because, hey, it's over there. We don't have to worry about it. But we're talking about the knowledge that truly runs their company. And so when you talk about, you know, bureaucracy and we talk about the issues with that, it runs, whether it's government or whether it's business, there always are issues with that.
Does a government, right now we're this economy and government at all levels are struggling with revenues. Is this a, and I understand that government is a big client base for you in the company. Obviously what you can do is you can help a government agency, whether it's an election office or an education bureaucracy, actually achieve more and accomplish more with fewer people. Is that not correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you took the tagline out of my mouth there is that constantly when I'm going in, and regardless, I mean, let's take a look at where we're at right now. We know that the economy is down. We know that sales are down. And typically what we find is that this is, I mean, the last 6 months has actually been, you know, a pretty strong period for us because when sales are down and, you know, you can't go out and get more sales or it's more difficult, then people start looking more internally. And then they start looking at those processes that run their day-to-day business and they start realizing that they are broken. So, you know, when I go and I'll visit a client, one of the things I hear over and over and over is that we have to do more with less. You know, what happens is that whether due to layoffs or just the fact that they, you know, they can't add positions, that they have to, you know, they have to be able to manage, you know, manage their work with less people and but keep the same levels of customer service because the reality is the work doesn't go away. The work is still there. So they have to find a way to be able to service their customers because let's face it, you know, without customers, regardless of what it is, you know, there is no business.
So how does one get to be a business automation consultant? I mean, what's your story, Davis? how'd you get here?
Well, you know, my story is I've been, you know, in sales, marketing, management, business development, and technology for pretty much most of my career. And it's interesting because, you know, it started out selling hardware, you know, selling, you know, whether it's anywhere from, you know, semiconductor chips to computers to scanners for this type of business, you know, getting rid of the paper. And what we find is, or what I have found is that, you know, as time has gone on, people wanted me to be less of a salesperson and be more of an advisor to come in there and say, hey, look, I've got this problem and can you help me solve it? And, you know, my nature is I'm a process guy. I'm an organization guy. So, you know, for me, I get a kick out of it, you know, because I can go in and I can kind of see, kind of get somewhat of a vision of what, you know, what they have in place that's not working. And like I said, I'm not always there to change their process because they understand it. But I can also help them. Let's find ways to cut time out of this and, you know, be able to collaborate more easily among all internal or external type of employees or customers or that type of thing.
Can you share like an example about how, like if there was a process, like even as simple as Stone writing a blog post or in collaboration with someone else, how would you go through and kind of map out the process and then figure out the efficient manner in which to do it?
That's a great question. I mean, the first thing, so let's just take any type of business that grows. Okay, the person who runs it, they're happy as long as sales are great. So they might not necessarily be the one that actually has started this process. They might have hired somebody, whether it's a front office worker, somebody in their finance department, whoever it is. They've said, okay, well, here's a process. It might be nothing more than, processing a purchase order, getting an invoice paid, or whatever it is. So the first thing you have to do is you truly have to get that person, that business owner or an executive to stop. I mean, literally stop and take a look at what's going on within their own company. So once we do that and we get them to realize that there is definitely some issues, that they've, whether it's too many people who are touching something, whether something is always lost or whatever it might be, we have to get them to realize that. The next thing we have to do is we try to sit down and we interview the people who are in that process. So because we want to understand, how does this thing really work right now? And let's face it, with a lot of people we talk to, they resist a change. They don't want to change because
it's their job. They think it's one less task for me than that I can be replaced.
Exactly. And everybody's somewhat fearful of technology. And so, once we can get it implemented and show that it makes their life easier, it's amazing how they come back and say, I don't know how I ever lived without this. But that first step is to get them to sit down and say, okay, here's how this process works right now. And a lot of times the executive or business owner doesn't even know how it works. So
just cares about the end result.
Yeah, or care, exactly. Right?
Yeah. Well, you're right. He doesn't necessarily care. He just wants to make sure everything works. But once he does sit down, sometimes there's just utter shock on his face because he sees that this process is completely broken. So once we evaluate, how it's being worked, then we talk about, what do we need to fix this? Can we streamline it by taking certain people out of the process? Does everybody need to touch this? Do we need to use technology? So we kind of walk through that. We try to do some analyzing and try to look at some return on investment. If we do put technology in, how long is it going to take to get that return? But ultimately, what needs to happen at that point is that when the executive or business owner has decided, he wants to move forward, he has to get buy-in from everybody involved. Because I tell you, getting technology in place, and there's people who will just go out of their way to sabotage it if they're not bought into the change.
You touched on a question that I had, in that when you sit down with an organization, and I think it's a big if they acknowledge there's a problem, do they tend to think that, oh yeah, our process is broken and help us fix the process, or do they think it's a personnel issue and that the people they have are not doing the things right, or that they need to be trained better and they could bring in a whole new realm of personnel and still have the same problem because the process hasn't changed? Is that a common problem?
Yeah, it is. I mean, a lot of times their immediate response is, well, let's fire this person, or let's move into some other place. And that's not always the solution there, because if you put a new person in the same broken process, you're going to get the same results. So, but one of the things that you said as far as the training is big too, because once you do implement whatever the new process is, and whatever new technology is, you have to train. And it's not something that is going to instantly change tomorrow. Okay, so just like with any process, it has to be implemented, it has to be tweaked a little bit, and as time goes on, then you start really seeing the results you want. Or what you decide is that, hey, we've actually solved this one process, now let's take this same type solution and go implement it in a different area.
Now, have you found that the solutions are similar from company to company?
No. No, I mean, they're all yes and no. I mean, let's take a for instance here. I've got a company who will go out and spend upwards to $1 million on an ERP system or some back end infrastructure type system that runs their whole business. And I mean, this is, they've made this huge investment here. And then what you find is the way they're getting all the information is all manual. You've got, people who are not trained properly, who are actually entering the data that they're relying on to make, make their business decisions. So in that case, we might go in and say, let's automate the front end, just like you automated the back end. Let's, try to come up with some intelligent capture of information so that, you know, we're getting it out. Number one, let's get it out of the paper. You know, I mean, let's just get it out of the paper, because number one, or number two, whatever, is that if you look at paper and you look at all the paper sitting there, you can't reuse that data easily. You know, in the world we live in right now, we move so quickly. And so if we produce data, we want to be able to reuse it in a lot of different ways, especially with social media now. If we've got data that's sitting, you know, that knowledge that's sitting there that's not in paper but is in some kind of electronic digital type format, now we can reuse it in a whole number of different ways to enhance our customer service, enhance our marketing, and everything else.
So you're a trusted advisor. You're obviously solving important business problems. But at some point, I mean, you got to sell it first. At some point, you got to bite them in the neck. So tell us a little bit about your sales and marketing process and how that unfolds.
Well, we deal with a very traditional customer base. We have, and like I said, we're all over the place. We're a lot of manufacturing, insurance, medical, you know, government, just about everything. And so, just like you know, a lot of companies, we are traditionally used a marketing process that is, you know, well, as far as prospecting is concerned, with cold calls and emails and that type of thing. You know, personally, what I'm seeing is that they don't certainly work the way it used to. Everybody, and I'll talk about just Metro Atlanta here, everybody's inundated with software companies and people trying to prospect. So, you know, we also go after, kind of concentrate on trade shows that are industry related, you know, to get our message out. In fact, I'm getting ready to attend one here in a couple of months. That's a government related one. And, you know, we'll do different things along those lines, seminars and webinars. But what really fascinates me now is the whole social media and the ability now to be able to get messages out in a way that we're not trying to cram it down somebody's throat, where they can look at it, they can evaluate it, and they can see if there's value on it on their terms, not necessarily on our terms.
So what do you find the most fun about your work, and what do you find maybe a little bit frustrating?
Well, obviously the most fun for me is actually getting in with a customer, a new customer, who's got a process. One here in particular that we have just recently done, I've got in here, and actually it's a government organization where they've been able to cut the amount of temporaries they need for a particular process in half by implementing our solution. But the thing that I've been able to do is take that and duplicate it in 10 different areas. 10 different customers that all they're all related. So for me, that's a lot of fun. You know, it's nice to be able to actually solve a problem and then be able to duplicate it. And I enjoyed it because I'm the process guy. On the other side, you know, the whole marketing thing and trying to, you know, to get new prospects, that's always a frustrating thing. And I don't care who you are, if you're in any type of sales, it's frustrating to be a hunter and trying to go out there and find new prospects. We do it. We use a whole number of different ways to do it, but it's, you know, it's never really easy.
Now, can you share maybe a funny kind of Rube Goldberg-esque process that one of your clients had that was just insane, and then you were able to?
Oh, boy. Now you've really put me on the spot here. Let me think.
I have post-its on a whiteboard in my office. Would that qualify?
No, but I'm sure there's been times where it was like touch 50 times and it just was kind of a circular thing and it could have just been touched less, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think of something real particular here, something that would be memorable to talk about. You know, I will tell you, there's been a number of times when I've gone in and the process has been so bad, I threw my hands up and actually had to walk out.
That it was like, this can't be.
It can't be. Yeah. And really the thing is that as talking to the owner of the company, it's kind of like, do you see what's going on here? And they would not see it. They just would not realize that the problem was as big as it is. And no matter what I tried to suggest to them, they just would not accept it.
Well, I imagine you deal a lot with an organization where they acknowledge that there's a problem, but they aren't willing to do the change necessary.
Yeah, they do that because, you know, it all comes down to the pain. You know, if the pain is not strong enough for them, no, they won't do it. And even if you show them the pain, you show them the return that they can get, you show them the impact on their customers and internally and everything else, sometimes they just don't want to make that decision.
Well, your marketing woes are now over. You've hit the big time. You're on the High Velocity Radio Show. How can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more about business process automation and get to know you and your work better?
All right. Well, you can certainly go to our website, which is www.image-1, that's the numeral 1.com, or you can reach us at 800-956-9000. And those are probably two best ways.
Well, listen, before we let you go, Ron, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Yeah, I've, just like I think a lot of people, I've made lots of mistakes. But the one that I think I would like to talk about here is going back to the whole prospecting thing. And you know, the whole lead generation thing keeps me up at night. You know, being a process guy, you know, trying to come up with a process for lead generation, you know, something that you can automate is something that I would love to see. But, you know, we deal with human beings, and that's not always the easiest thing. But, you know, as I mentioned, I've been in this technology industry for a long time. There was a portion of time, though, where I actually got out of it and went to help a family member in their business. And then after that little episode was done, I got back in it. And what I realized, what is the power of relationships. And actually, when I say that, is that, you know, you spend so much time cultivating prospects, or really cultivating relationships. And we do those in numerous ways that, you know, we get them to the point where we can be what I'm considering that trusted advisor. And that's the where now I can really rely on them for referrals and, you know, opening up new doors, which is the best way to be able to get new business. But when I stepped out and stepped back in, I realized that a lot of those relationships, because I hadn't continued to cultivate them, were more or less gone. I mean, we were now somewhat of acquaintance. And so, you know, one of the things that I believe that anybody who is in business, let's face it, business is all about sales. I don't care what it is, and that you do have to build up that clientele. Understand that building relationships and cultivating them and keeping them is about as important as anything you can do.
It really is a long-term commitment.
Yeah,
you need to continue to provide for the care and feeding of those relationships.
Yes, you do.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been an absolute delight. I hope you'll come back sometime.
I really appreciate it, and I hope I can come back sometime.
All right. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Ron Davis, my co-host Todd Schnick, our producer Lee Cantor, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.